to India and Ireland, round Africa and back again. We don't really need to know just where we'll go. Maybe Canada, then to Brazil, then through the Alpine foothills. All I really want to know is can we go? Oh baby, can we go? Round and around the globe.
Welcome to Take Me With You, episode 103. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Cheryl. We are two well-traveled people who want to go everywhere.
But that's not going to happen. So instead, we'll travel vicariously by inviting a guest to share their unique travel stories with us.
Today, we're talking to Cameron. Cameron is a nursing student who's originally from Seattle, but she grew up in Zambia, and she's lived in Spokane, Idaho, Brazil, Australia, and Papua New Guinea. Welcome, Cameron.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That is an impressive list of places to have lived.
Sometimes I'm happy about it, and then other times it's like I'm really sad that I've had to move that many times. That's kind of not my favorite. But yeah, no, it's fun.
I mean, I think probably that you have learned one of the weird, I don't even know if it's a lesson of life, the weird facts of life of just like the older you get, the more people you know who live in places that are not where you live. And it probably just happens sooner for you. Because I think for me as an adult, it's like, oh man, I have so many friends who don't live near me. And so there's a part where that's really cool. Because then you get to go visit them. And it's so fun to like see on Instagram, like other places people are exploring and living. And then there's also like, I just want someone to hang out with on Friday and my friends don't live here.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely one of the things that you get really used to with moving a lot is saying goodbye, which is not fun. But then you get to see and travel and visit people all over the world. So there are perks and there are cons.
Yeah, for sure. Have you visited Zambia since you lived there?
I have. I visited with my family, I think 2 years after we moved back to the States. And then I went by myself in 2017 to go live with one of our friends and work at their clinic. He's a doctor. And I just kind of went and shadowed him for a couple weeks.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. So since you're not going to talk about Zambia and we're going to ask you about all sorts of other things, can you give us a little overview of living there?
Yeah, totally. I moved there with my family when I was 7 years old.
And, you were seven?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
It was that long ago.
Cameron's dad was our youth pastor, so this is why, like, we go way back.
You guys have known me for my whole life.
Yep. So,
pretty cool. So we moved there when I was seven. And so, obviously, when you're that old, you have no idea what's going on. I don't think I even knew where Zambia was when we moved there. It's like, oh, we're going to Africa. but yeah, then we lived there for 5 years, and my dad worked with local pastors and local churches while we were there. And then we moved back to the States 5 years later and ended up back in Spokane, Washington.
Wow. So those were some really important years in your life then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that
12.
Those years definitely influenced me in a lot of ways. Definitely, definitely sparked the love of travel and different cultures.
That's cool.
That's where it all began.
That's awesome.
Well, that's a great segue because we like to ask our guests three questions to get to know your travel style a little bit. And the first one, I think you've started to answer, but you might want to give some more details. But why do you travel?
I think my favorite thing while traveling is meeting people. Like we kind of talked about earlier. It makes it a lot harder to leave the places that you go. But I think people has always been the focus of my travels. And I think when people is the focus, it's a whole nother level of rewarding. You meet people, not only do you build relationships, but you also get to see different sides of the culture and of the country than you would have otherwise if you're just taking it on in the tourist standpoint. So
I love that.
And obviously living in a place, you get to meet the people mm-hmm. who are there, but you've also done some other travel, not living in places. So how do you still meet people, since that's kind of one of the things you really love about travel? How do you do mm-hmm. that when you're not living in the place?
Yeah, it's definitely trickier that way. I've had a few experiences that stick out in my mind. So like Airbnb is really fun. Mm. It's a really cool way to meet people because you have people who are inviting you into their homes. And some Airbnb hosts aren't as like welcoming or excited to meet you as others. But I've had a few experiences where the Airbnb hosts, like the one I'm thinking about is in Taiwan, he was super excited to meet Americans and wanted to practice his English. And so he was just like, oh my gosh, I want to take you guys all around this town, like show you all the best food and make sure you get the best experience in my city. And so just experiences like that, if you are kind and even if there's a language barrier, if you try to communicate, it really means a lot to people. And if you think about it, when you go to a different country, you're excited to meet people from that country, but you're also they're also just as excited to meet you because you're also from a different culture. So, yeah.
And I love that. And I think sometimes we forget that living where we do, where there are so many people from mm-hmm. other countries, that I think, like, to me, I don't know if I always experience that excitement of like, oh, you're from another country, because it feels like so normal in our lives, you know, living in a city and on the West mm-hmm. Coast. But I think that's a very good point, that like that still is a very real thing. And I think even personally, when I get a chance to connect with people from other countries, it's exciting. It's just like maybe like not totally. Quite the novelty. It just is based on where other people live, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cameron, what type of traveler are you?
I'm definitely a free-spirited, wander the streets. like just have fun and have no plans. There are definitely certain things that you have to plan. Like you have to plan where you're going to stay. Some people don't, I guess. You could just be full on free spirited and just
Yeah, we've talked
it,
to those people. It's horrifying.
That's scary to me. That's really scary to me, especially if you're traveling alone. Or even just the smaller groups of people. I wouldn't like the idea of maybe not being able to find some place to sleep. That's scary. But I love going like on Pinterest before going someplace, or maybe even on TripAdvisor and just seeing what's there. And if there's something that really stands out to me, I'll make a note of that and kind of plan that into the itinerary. But I think as far as the way I like to experience cities, it's walking and just wandering into random shops, just trying random restaurants. I love food. So if I'm going someplace that has a specific type of food that I really want to try, I'll plan that in too. But
totally. Yep. Yeah.
I was gonna say, you're speaking it's to Cheryl right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm such a foodie.
Yeah. And the like the weirder the food, the better too. It's like I want to try all the weirdest stuff.
Do you usually like everything that you try?
For the most part, there are definitely some terrible things that I have tried in the past, but like I don't think anything has made me too sick, so no regrets. But
too sick. I'm curious now. What are some of the worst things that you've tried?
I tried this really, really questionable sushi in Taiwan.
I thought you were gonna say like frog brains or something. You're like, no, questionable sushi.
No, by far the sushi was worse than anything I've eaten.
Like gas station sushi or
it was just from this night market in Taiwan, and I was like, oh, I love sushi, great, this is gonna be awesome. And I have no idea what was in that. It probably just been sitting there for too long. I don't know. No. It was so bad. So.
Are you pretty good at just like smiling and saying thank you if you're not into something, but you feel like the politeness matters?
Yes, okay. Definitely. And I think in certain countries too, it's like culturally really bad for you to turn away food. Like in Papua New Guinea, someone giving you food is a really big gesture. And when they cook for you, it's like, just a way to express their love and appreciation. And so if you don't at least try something, it comes off as really rude. So, yep. Yeah, grinning and bearing it is something that I've had to do a few times.
Travel skill.
That is a very good travel skill.
It really is. Comes in handy.
What is your number one travel tip?
I'd say my number one travel tip is, as I think this kind of goes along with meeting people, but when you go to a country, try and learn at least a little bit of the language. Learn how to say hi and thank you, and ask what their name is, ask where they're from. It doesn't have to be anything huge, but it is really fun to just communicate a little bit with people, even if they know no English. And another tip that goes along with that is to download Google Translate and then download the language to where you're going so you can have it offline if you don't have service. I've had like full conversations with people over Google Translate, and yeah.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
Okay, I'm going to ask more about this now, because Google Translate has been around for a while now, but they keep updating features. So when you said you've had full conversations, have you used you talk to it and then it will translate it and then speak back to the other person? Is that what you use?
Yeah. Cool.
And did it work well?
There were some glitches. A lot of people talk down about Google Translate because it's not exact. Like, you can never exactly translate what you want to say. So there are some funny stories of that too. Like, I was trying to explain to someone in Brazil what Thanksgiving is like, because it's an American holiday. And so I was trying to explain, like, oh, we eat turkey and this. And I couldn't remember the word for turkey in Portuguese. And so I looked it up on Google Translate and it came up with the word for turkey, but the country. And so I was like, we eat turkey. And they were like, how?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So you just kind of have to have a sense of humor about it, but it works pretty well. Yeah. And it kind of breaks the ice too, because it's a little awkward, but then, you know, if you just go for it, it can be pretty fun.
Yeah. I think that could also be helpful for people, I don't know, maybe like me, who often feel intimidated by another language. I'm a perfectionist. And so if I can't say it the right way, I'd rather not say it at all. And I know that that's not the best way of doing it. I know that that doesn't help you learn a language or engage with people, but that's still my natural tendency. Whereas having a device,
I can totally relate to that,
could actually I think make that seem a little bit better. Cause then, if it screws up, it's the device's fault. It's not my fault.
Exactly. Yeah. If they mispronounce it, it's Siri's fault. Like,
exactly. Awesome. That's a great tip. All right. So you've been to a whole bunch of places and lived a whole bunch of places. So which trip are you going to be talking about today?
I'm going to be talking about my most recent trip. I took a gap year in between my undergrad and nursing school and decided to do missions for a year. So I spent 3 months in Brazil and then actually came home for Christmas and then headed out on a 6 month trip where I went to Australia for 3 months and then Papua New Guinea for 3 months.
I'm so excited to hear about this, because I think we talked before you went on that trip. And I was like, oh my gosh, you need to come on our podcast. And then you were just telling us before we started recording that you feel annoying sometimes when you keep talking about travel and keep talking about this trip. So this is the right place for you. We are excited and not annoyed by you talking about this.
I am super excited too.
So why don't you start by giving us sort of an overview of kind of what it looked like to travel? Were you with an organization? Were you by yourself? Kind of highlight kind of big picture, sort of where you went and in sequence. And then you can pick a place and kind of dive in and tell us more about it.
Perfect. So I went with an organization called YWAM, Youth with a Mission. They do these six-month programs called discipleship training schools. So basically, it's young adults, but it's mostly young adults, but actually any age can come and join, just have to be over 18. And they have bases set up all over the world. But I chose to go to Australia with this organization because they had a specific medical outreach opportunity. They have a medical ship in Papua New Guinea. So they take volunteers from all over the world, just from different medical backgrounds. So they have like a dental clinic. They have doctors, nurses. They even have eye surgeons come and do procedures in the ship. So that was very attractive to me. So that's how I ended up going to Australia. I actually got to travel with some friends there. So I had three friends that all decided to do the DTS also. So the four of us traveled to Australia together. On the way, we stopped through Taiwan because we had a layover there. And so we took like 5 days in Taiwan, which was super fun and totally not the kind of experience I was expecting. I had never been to a country in Asia before. And so that was just a whole different cultural experience, and I loved it. Definitely want to go back. And then we spent a week driving up the coast of Australia, the east coast of Australia, in a camper van. That was a blast.
In a camper van?
Yes. It was super fun. Just like stopping at beaches along the way. We flew into Gold Coast, which is down pretty far south. And then we ended up in Townsville, which is up in Queensland. In the North Coast. And then after we had like 3 months in Townsville where we did, it was basically like the training portion. So we had lectures and speakers come in. We spent a lot of time getting to know the people in our group. And we would take little day trips and explore islands off the coast. And Queensland is just beautiful. It's really tropical and humid all the time. And it was just a fun experience. And then after 3 months there, we went to Papua New Guinea, which is Papua New Guinea shares actually an island with Papua Indonesia. So I actually don't think I understood this completely until I went there, but you hear Papua and Papua New Guinea, and I always thought they're the same country, but they're two different countries, share the same island, just split down the middle.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
So Papua is on the right side, and then Indonesia is the left side.
Oh, okay. Google Maps is helpful for this because there's this big island that kind of looks like the shape of a dinosaur. Uh-huh. And then there's just a line down the middle, which is perfectly straight like...
Shape of a dinosaur?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like
a long-necked dinosaur.
Clouds. Yeah, it's kind of like when you think clouds look like things. It's like that level of... It has very short legs and a long tail and a long neck, and its mouth is wide open.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what it looks like.
I can sort of see it.
And then it has a perfectly straight line other than some little squiggle. Is that a river? That's a river. Okay. Yep. Shapes of land are so funny when they just go straight line versus like body of water.
Oh, you mean borders?
Yes. Yeah, shapes. Yes, shape borders of countries and states.
I feel like geography would be a lot easier if all countries were just straight lines, all the borders.
Yeah, but the river thing makes sense. So yeah, it's just kind of interesting. Okay, so different countries. That's really interesting. Okay, so you were in Papua New Guinea. which is the east side of that island.
Mm-hmm. And I spent 3 months there. 12 weeks I spent on the medical ship. So the medical ship sailed pretty much around the entire coast of Papua New Guinea. And then after that 12 weeks, we went inland and lived in two different villages inland in PNG.
Wow. That's awesome. So what do you want to dive into? What would you like to tell us more about?
I think I could really dive into my experience in PNG, because I was able to see a lot of the country, which was cool. But I think I also, because I lived there, I got to know a lot of the culture, which was really cool.
Okay. So where you said the city was PNG? I'm
probably PNG is the abbreviation for Papua New Guinea.
It's the letter NG.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I am definitely not fall. Okay, gotcha. I thought,
okay. Yep.
Right. It's how the hip young kids are saying it these days. PNG. So.
Here I was trying to make it the name of the city. I was like, oh no, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, but when you went, you said you went inland after you were on the ship.
Yes.
And in two different cities. You did or did not tell us the name of those cities?
Have not told you the name of those cities.
Okay, great.
Yet.
Super. I'm not confident in my listening ability apparently today. So, all right. Yeah. Tell us about PNG.
Okay. So we started out in Port Moresby, which is the capital city of Papua New Guinea. We flew into there from Australia and boarded the ship. And then the ship took at the beginning said I was 12 weeks on the ship, 12 weeks inland. I was actually in Papua New Guinea for 12 weeks total. I was like, wait, this is not adding up in my head right now. So 6 weeks on the ship, 6 weeks inland. We took 3 weeks to sail from Port Moresby to Alatau, which is the very tip, so basically halfway around Papua New Guinea. And then from Alatau, we took the ship to Leh, which is around to the north, it's the north side. And in between, we had the outreaches are broken up into two-week sections. So for 2 weeks you're sailing, you have all of the people who come from Australia and all over the world. They fly in, they get on the ship for 2 weeks. Every day you go to a different village. So you have these like little pontoon boats that take you from the main ship inland. And you go into the village, you set up camp. If you're in the health care section, you set up the clinic. Since I wasn't a nurse quite yet, I didn't have medical experience. I worked in a couple different areas. I actually did something they called community engagement. You go into the village and you go do education in schools or you play games with the kids. There's a lot of education that goes on just involving like malaria, tuberculosis, and just sanitization. I'm trying to think. Is that the right word?
Sanitation.
Sanitation. There you go. yeah. And so that was really cool. And then just playing with kids is such a blast because you show up at a village and just kids flock out of nowhere. And so you just get to play lots of soccer. I got my hair braided almost every time I'd go into the village. You know, you can tell Bible stories or do little Bible studies. It's really, I loved the freedom of being in that group because, again, you get to like get to know people. And with the clinics, you know, you're moving through so many people, you don't really get the chance to sit down and talk to people. So that was really fun. Community engagement also did things like They dug a couple wells in a few villages and, organized, like, I guess, cleanup days with churches. So, like, you would go to the beach and pick up garbage. The villages that were the closest to the big cities, so like Port Moresby, had a lot of plastic. And they're not really set up for disposal of their garbage. And so it's really sad, but the water is just like full of garbage. And so that was something that I was not expecting for sure. I was like, oh, I'm going to this, you know, third world country, developing country. And just seeing all the garbage was really sad, and seeing how, you know, Western culture introduced into their culture, they weren't quite equipped to take that on completely. So coming in and kind of trying to help them manage it was good. But then the farther we got away from the big cities, the more tropical and remote it got. You know, they just don't have stores or shops. They live completely off the land. And so that's where you get like the pristine water and beaches. And I 100% liked being more remote as far as like the people. It was harder to communicate because they didn't know English as well. But they also had more of their like welcoming, hospitable attitudes. So yeah, I could speak a lot on my thoughts and just like Western influence in developing countries and how I think we should navigate that and that balance. But overall, I think the more I headed inland away from civilization, the more I fell in love with the country. Just like, okay, this is the core of this country. And yeah, there's just so much to learn from them. So the ship was incredible. It was nice to have a place to go back to. I had a bed, electricity, like a warm meal every night. It was so fun just being surrounded by people from all different countries. There's people from Mexico and people from the Netherlands and people from the Faroe Islands and Singapore. So that was a blast. And then after we got off the ship, me and my team of like 14 people, headed inland, to villages. So this was the true PNG experience, because we didn't have any electricity or running water or internet or really any luxury that you can that we're so used to having, I guess, in this country. So and that was by far my favorite part of the trip. It took some adjusting to. But it was almost harder to adjust coming back to Western civilization than it was to adjust to that way of life.
What sorts of things did you have to adjust to?
Little things that I was not expecting. For example, showering was interesting because everybody, all the women have like their portion of the river that they shower and do the dishes in and do their laundry in, and then the men have their portion of the river or stream or whatever. But in Papua New Guinea, modesty standards are a lot different. And so our team coming in, we wanted to be as respectful as possible. So we never showed our knees or our shoulders. That being said, when you're showering, you shower fully clothed. And so it took us a couple times to really get the hang of like, okay, how do you do this? Like, how do you like get clean, but also be as effective as possible. So we actually would change into our dirty clothes, go shower in our dirty clothes so you can wash your clothes and your body at the same time.
Smart.
And then go back to the hut in your wet clothing and then change into dry, clean clothes.
Do they use anything to actually wash? Like some form of something that would be like soap? Or was it really just like you scrub your body with your hand in the water and that's how you get clean?
They had soap.
Okay.
And I'm not exactly sure what they made it out of. I brought my own. So I had that. But yeah, it was really fun because you'd be taking a shower and you have like 8 kids just like swimming in the river next to you. And you're like, hi. And then ladies are sitting there washing the dishes, talking to you as you're bathing. So it's very, very fun experience. Yeah.
That is very different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was picturing like we had someone on as you talked about like bucket showers, and obviously that even is pretty different, but a river shower, that's totally different.
And what's so funny is the only thing they had prepared us for, like, oh, you're going to go to Papua New Guinea and you're going to take bucket showers. And I was like, okay, like, that's okay. I actually would rather shower in a river than do bucket showers. I had to take a bucket shower once and I was like, I missed the river, like, to get me back the river. Because you just feel a lot cleaner because the water is rushing right past you. So
just that water pressure.
it's nice natural water pressure.
Okay, so I want to know, you lived in Zambia for 5 years. And I don't know, I mean, I know that your family lived there. What was life like there? Did your family have electricity there? Did you have running water? Like, I know nothing. And I've learned on this podcast how very little I know about a lot of countries, especially developing nations. And so what was that lifestyle? And did that prepare you for experiences like this? Yes. Or how does that compare for you?
Yeah. Zambia, we did have electricity and water, but very unreliably. So there are seasons of the year just depending on like rainfall and the country's economic well-being that you would just go entire days without power and then the power might come on for a couple hours at night. Mm. We had like maybe weeks without power and then sometimes the power would be on all the time. So you never really knew when the power was going to go out or when it was going to come back on. Okay. So that was a good preparation. And we did have like a house, it was built out of brick. So there's no heating or AC or insulation, but it was like a normal house. And we had a really big property. And so it was definitely different, but I think the biggest thing that prepared me for Papua New Guinea was actually just the flexibility that you need to live in a in Eastern culture. So as Westerners, we're very time-oriented and very goal-oriented, and we're really an individualistic culture. While Eastern cultures are more collectivist cultures. So their cultures are more about family and people. So there's a joke like, you know, island time is something that a lot of people are familiar with. Like in island time, like there is no specific time for something, you know, you just show up and once everyone there, church starts and there were people in my team who had never really experienced a culture like that before. And so just the laid back attitude of the culture just drove them crazy. And it's hard when you're used to like punctuality to feel like, oh, they just don't care about us because they're not showing us up on time or they're not valuing our time because they're just taking so long to do this. When in reality, that's just how they do things. And there's so many beautiful things about that way of doing life. Because you actually give time to the people in you. Yeah. You give your time to the people in your life as the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, when you live in Papua New Guinea and you have everything you need in your garden to eat and, in, you know, you don't have a job because you just live off the land, mm-hmm. it's a much easier to have that kind of attitude. But yeah, Zambia really prepared me as far as just knowing how to interact with people from that culture.
Mm. Did it feel like going home to you a little bit?
Yeah, it totally did. I felt really comfortable. I think all the moving has made it easier for me to feel at home in places. And so I think the more that you move, the quicker you adapt in a lot of ways. So even though PNG was a lot different than Zambia and a lot less developed in than anything I had ever experienced, I felt like I was able to become comfortable in it pretty quickly.
Would you say that you are more comfortable in a more collectivist or individualistic culture, just in general?
I love that question. This is something that I could also talk about for so long, but I definitely feel more comfortable in a collectivist culture. Like I think you said earlier, Cheryl, the 7 to 12 range, that age is like really big for development. And yeah. I didn't realize that until later in life, but coming, like growing up in a collectivist culture in those years and all that you're learning and taking in and all those, you know, experiences you're having, they really shape how you think and how you view relationships in the world around you. Mm-hmm. So, it's always been easier for me to think in that line as opposed to the Western line of thinking. The people-oriented focus, I think, is something that just comes really easily to me. And so, like, while traveling, it's really enjoyable for me to get to know the people.
Mm. That's so cool. So you have younger sisters. You have three younger sisters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they were obviously at different ages of their lives that they lived in Zambia than you. So how does that experience compare for them to you? Like, can you see more pieces of individualistic culture in them compared to you?
Yeah, it is really interesting. I think personality has a lot to do with it too.
Sure.
But definitely my youngest sister, who really doesn't remember much. I think she was 2 when we moved back to the States. You know, it is funny to see just how comfortable she is in this American culture. Whereas there's still some things about American culture that I feel behind on. Like she's super into TikTok and all the dances, and I'm just, I don't know. I can't buy into it. I can't do it. So yeah, it is pretty funny. And I think of the 4 of us, me and my 2 next youngest sisters, the 3 of us want to go overseas and do missions. And my youngest sister, since she doesn't really remember that lifestyle, is actually the only one who hasn't yet expressed the desire to go and do missions and live abroad. So
interesting. That's so interesting.
Wow. And how old is she?
She's 12.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You guys got so old. It's not because you're so old. It's because then I feel so old.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yep. Oh, I agree with that. This has nothing to do with travel, but this last week I was helping lead a training for school, and mm-hmm. I was helping do some stuff for new teachers, first-year teachers. And of course, it's all online. We do Teams instead of Zoom, but same basic thing, right? And up pops this picture, this video, and I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. Former student. She's now going to be a I think a middle school PE teacher. Yep.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, it was not that long ago that you were in my class, but apparently wow. it was long enough ago because now you're a teacher.
Oh my gosh.
That must be so
weird.
The
one that got me the most was a kid I babysat, got married, and then had a baby. And this was like many years ago now. And I'm like, how are you? How is that? I don't understand. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. PNG. So so here's again my ignorance of a lot of countries, but I picture the jungle. I picture like what you're saying about like off the grid living, even like a tribe has their own language mm-hmm. type of world. I did yes. not know there was an airport anywhere on Papua mm-hmm. New Guinea. So what else do I not know? Like, what do the cities look like? What do they have? like fill us in cool. on the non like tribe in an isolated jungle, because Cheryl is ignorant.
Okay. Including if there's differences on different parts of the island.
Yeah.
The island isn't sure. super big, but I also know that in other countries you can travel not very far and all of a sudden things could be a little bit different.
Yes. Okay, I could just do like a little PNG fun fact session.
Yes, do it.
Here we go. Yes.
So here's my favorite one. Papua New Guinea is the country with the most languages in the entire world.
What?
Really?
So within Papua New Guinea, which really isn't that big of a country, there's 860 plus languages.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, so I wasn't wrong about the like, you go to a little tribe and they have mm-hmm. their own language. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Wow.
So Papua New Guinea is a mountain country. So the coast is obviously coastal and beautiful, like picture Hawaii, Bali, you know, all those quintessential tropical locations, but it gets very mountainous. That's called the Highland region. So Papua New Guinea is actually broken up into provinces. So you have like Eastern, Western Highlands, Moro Bay, Oro, and yeah, just depending on the province, you have different customs, which is really cool. One of my favorites is in Oro. The word Oro actually means welcome. So whenever you go into a village, they would just start yelling Oro at you. Oro, Oro, Oro! and that was
beautiful.
Cool. And that was something you only experience in Oro. And then in Moro Bay, it's very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just very wet all the time. Like it rains all the time. All year round. And so they have different ways that they build their houses than the people do that build their houses near the water. PNG, the two main cities are Port Moresby and Lae. There's an airport in each of those. There's two universities in Papua New Guinea. It's really common for the more affluent families to send their kids to Australia for college, but they are developing colleges over there. There's still villages in Papua New Guinea, especially up in the highlands and the mountains, that have never been reached by any form of Western civilization technology whatsoever. Which is really cool, and I think getting rarer and rarer. So there's actually a trail that I am blanking on the name of right now. I'll probably remember it later. But there's a trail that goes from one side, like the north coast, all the way through the mountains to the south side. And you can hike it. It's like a hiking trail. And so a lot of like intense hikers go, and it passes through all these villages.
Is it the Kokoda track?
That's it, the Kokoda.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just because of how there's so few roads, to get anywhere, I think that accounts for the languages. Like, there can be a village on one side of the mountain that doesn't even know the village on the other side exists just because of the terrain and how hard it is to get around.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. There's a lot of World War II wreckage in Papua New Guinea. I got to see a few airplanes that just were still sitting on the beaches, which was kind of cool.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. And Papua New Guinea was mainly westernized by missionaries, actually. A lot of German missionaries and Dutch missionaries. And there's actually a language called Talk Pigeon. Because the country has so many languages, once trade started up and once cities started growing, it was like Tower of Babel situation. You can kind of imagine, like, no one speaks the same language. And so they created this language called Talk Pigeon. That's basically a combination of English and German. And
oh, wow.
I think a little Dutch. And so it's just the most fun language to speak, because if you want to say, my name is Cameron, you say, name belong me, Cameron. So it sounds really? Like baby English.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
It's so fun. Yeah.
Little Yoda-ish, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Or you say, if you want to ask how old are you, you'd say, Hamas Christmas blow you. How many Christmases do you have?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
wow, that's interesting.
It's really fun because you feel like, I mean, half the time, I probably thought I was speaking Talk Pigeon and I was really just speaking bad English. But it's it's funny because it is an effective way to communicate with people, because even though there's, you know, each village has their own language, which they call a Talk Ples, which is just their native language. Almost everyone speaks Talk Pigeon. So
even in the more remote villages.
Not the remote ones, the ones where, like, there's just no access to, but all the ones that we went to, for the most part.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Hmm.
That's so cool.
I mean, they kind of made their own Google Translate, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was so, I remember looking through this, some missionary had made a dictionary of talkless words. And it kind of reminds me of, like, Jamaican English, too, where, like, you can easily, if someone's talking to you, you can pick out what they're saying, or if you're reading it, you can you can figure it out. But some of the ways things were spelled, like, cucumber was, like, cucumba, K-U-K-U-B-A. Like, oh, cucumber, okay.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
Cheryl's distracted by something.
I'm looking at Google Maps and I'm just looking at the different photos that pop up when I click on different cities in PNG. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to do when we're talking about a location. It's like, okay, I need to see this place.
Right. I have so many pictures from Papua New Guinea.
Share them.
So many. Yes, I will.
We'll post them on our Instagram.
For sure.
So, Cameron, any other stories that, like, you, when you're saying, like, you don't want to share too many stories about this trip with your friends, but, like, what do you have any other things that you're like, man, I just love to talk about this thing that happened or this experience or this aspect of this country?
Yeah. I love talking about the food. And the
oh,
fruit.
Here we go. Yep.
Oh, boy.
I cannot eat bananas anymore. The bananas in Papua New Guinea were so good that I came back here and all the bananas just tasted like garbage. I was like, oh my gosh.
You became a banana snob?
Yeah. It's really sad. And same thing with like pineapple and mangoes and papaya. I didn't even like papaya. I didn't even like coconut before going to Papua New Guinea. But once you're there and someone like literally climbed a tree and picked a coconut off of it for you,
oh, wow.
it's just another level of amazing. Yeah,
that's fantastic. I mean, to be fair, I think I'm glad that you have that awareness of like not trying to sound like you're bragging about travel stories, because if you're like, oh, this coconut's just not that good, that is where it sounds a little like
exactly
braggy.
Exactly. If your friend is like, oh, my favorite fruit's a mango, and you're like, oh my gosh, me too. And then when they climb the tree and like throw it down to you, and it's just, yeah.
Like when you're in Trader Joe's and you see that one sitting there.
It's a little hard not to come off as them.
Yeah,
a little fair. Bit snobby. She didn't go that far.
Well, okay, that does get to my theory on foods and like what foods people like, because I don't think that you can really say you dislike a food unless you've had the best version of it, because it's possible that you just don't like the crappy versions of it.
That's so such a good theory.
Now, I would disagree.
Oh, no.
To some extent. I think you're right that you like, if you may have the best version and like that more than a crappy version.
Yeah.
But if all you have access to is a crappy version, then I think it's fair to say you don't like that food.
Okay, fair. I think it's more like an openness to continue to experience things and try it.
Yes. Yeah.
Like for me, there's only three foods I don't like. But even like certain dishes that I'm like, oh, that dish is fine. It's not my favorite. When someone's like, oh my gosh, this restaurant has this amazing whatever, I'm like, of course I'm going to try it, because what if I like the good version and it's just like I haven't had it prepared really well, or I had it prepared and there was one ingredient that wasn't that good in that dish, or whatever it is, you know? And so I think there's just like, I think that openness to, like, if someone says they have a really amazing blank, try it and see. And if you still don't like it, then maybe you actually don't like that food. Which, I mean, like, I don't like bananas. And so I don't like Bananas Foster. But my husband and I went to the restaurant that is the birthplace of Bananas Foster. So, of course, I had to try it. Because what if that would make me like bananas? I'm like, oh, I like it at the birthplace of Bananas Foster. You know? And so, but when I didn't like it with butter and sugar and rum, I think that means that I actually don't like
except
it.
Cheryl, you have not had a banana that was picked off of a tree in PNG and given to you. So maybe
that's what I was going to counter with.
Yeah, maybe I would like bananas there, and it's just that I don't like these silly American bananas that we're having. So
I would honestly not be surprised if you went to PNG and liked the bananas.
Well, have you heard that banana candy is flavor is based off of type of banana that is now it the word extinct?
Yes, it is extinct.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason banana candy doesn't taste like bananas is because it's based off of a flavor of it's a French name that I'm going to get wrong. Jean Benet. But that's definitely not right, because that's not it. But it's something else that Cheryl's going to Google right now. Yep. And our current banana is the Cavendish banana. And so it's actually a different species of banana that may go extinct before too long, as a matter of fact, for the same reason that the original one did. Did you find it there, Cheryl?
I'm looking. The first thing I saw was like a myth thing. But Cameron, it does make me wonder if you're like having a different kind of banana there altogether, and maybe it's just like a better kind.
There's so many kinds too.
Oh, really?
I never knew that you could have so many different kinds of bananas within the same region. There were cooking bananas, so like plantains, I guess is what we call them, that you only
cook. I do like plantains. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting that you like plantains and not bananas.
Yeah, wow. I like cooked plantains. I think they're great.
Okay.
And plantain chips. I love those. Yeah.
No,
thank you. So maybe I would like some bananas.
Okay, so you would come to PNG and like that. I'm pretty sure, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we had bananas for almost every meal.
Wow.
Because they just prepare the bananas in every possible way you can think of. Like, they fry the bananas, and they squash them, and they boil them, and they roast them, and they eat them raw. So
that's so cool.
It's
so fun.
It's really, it was awesome. I'm really surprised. I'm not sick of
a banana
them,
trip.
Honestly.
I know. Because I love finding new ways to prepare food. So that sounds so fun.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you probably saw a lot of that, though, if people are living off the land. Oh, how fun. Mm-hmm. Getting creative with cooking. That's awesome.
I found it. It's called the Gros Michel.
Okay.
Gros Michel.
Yeah.
That's a fun fact.
Not that it really matters, but there you go.
I like that.
There's a thing. I mean, according to the internet, also, a myth has sprung up. The artificial banana is based on the Gros Michel banana, which was nearly wiped out in the 20th century. But that says it's a myth. So I don't know if that.
But what does it say is true instead?
I don't know. This is a long article. that involves reading. So
that's
we'll
too
see.
Much work.
yeah.
I mean, it's possible that it's a myth. I haven't, you know.
Somebody, I don't know if this is someone's name or something, found no verifiable sources to support the myth.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, artificial banana flavoring was actually just made up out of something completely unrelated to banana.
Yeah, I mean, I think we run into that with a lot of artificial flavors, that they often don't taste like the real thing. Mm-hmm. But it also, I think, would fit time-wise of when the Gros Michel went extinct.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. So
it's more fun if it's true.
It is more fun if it's true. That's
I'm
going
to go with it.
So we're going to declare it true based on its funness level. Are you cool with that, science teacher, Ryan?
Yeah, with all of the authority that we have in order to just declare something true. Why not?
Oh, man. Well, Cameron, thank you so much for sharing about this amazing trip with us. We have a couple questions for you to kind of wrap up this segment. So the first one is based on the title of our show, Take Me With You. If you could take us with you to just one thing on this whole trip, what would it be and why?
Well, now I'm just thinking about bananas because we just had that long conversation. And I just really want you to try a banana. but I think I would take you there. One of the villages we lived in was actually on top of a mountain that we had to hike up to get. Well, the village was actually not on the mountain, but where we were staying was on the mountain. So every day to get into the village, we had to hike down the mountain and forage this river and then vice versa. And the view from our house where we were staying was so beautiful. And I just wish that everybody could see that view of just mountains and the river valley. And it was gorgeous. And all the hills are covered in this grass that's like literally rips you to shreds if you walk through it. But from afar, it just looks like the most comfy, like soft looking grass. And it's so beautiful. So
wait, how does grass rip you to shreds?
Is it
because it's actually as tall as you. And then the leaves are just really sharp. So you try and walk through it and it's like paper cuts all over your body.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Wow. No wonder people don't travel between villages then.
And, yep, exactly. Death of
Well, we would love to go to that mountaintop place. Mm-hmm. That sounds fantastic. Yeah. And Cameron, this next question is not quite as fun for us during COVID times, but I'm still going to ask you, but I'll give you like a modified version. So either what is your next trip, or if you don't have one, then what do you wish your next trip would be?
Ooh. I was going to be traveling this whole summer, actually, before COVID. I was going to be going to Peru with my nursing school to do clinics in Peru. And I think that would probably be the place next on my list just because of how excited I was to go and experience that culture, Machu Picchu, the Amazon rainforest. So I think that would probably be my answer.
Mm. Well, I hope you get there someday. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And do you have any travel questions for us?
Yes. I would love to hear your most awkward travel story. Like, what's your most awkward experience you've ever had while traveling?
We haven't been asked this one before.
Oh, good.
It's been over 100 episodes, and this is a brand new question. You did not ask us our favorite country, and I'm just so happy about that.
Okay, good.
Awkward. I'm not having trouble coming up with awkward. I'm having trouble coming up with most.
Most, of course.
Okay. That's good. That means you've been traveling, right?
Okay, I have one. I don't know if this is my most awkward, but it does help that I was in seventh grade. And when you're in seventh grade, everything in life is very awkward.
Oh my gosh, everything.
So I got to go to Japan when I was in seventh grade on an exchange student trip with 9 other students from my middle school. And it was a short-term exchange student trip. So we were just there for a week and a half, but we each got to stay with a family. Everything. Cool. It was really cool. On the way there, it's a very long plane ride. And all of us were spread out throughout the plane, as often happens in group trips. You know, it's kind of like, well, we got one seat here and one seat here. Mm-hmm. So I was just sitting on my own, well, next to this woman and her daughter, and I got a nosebleed. And I had never had a nosebleed in my life. So I didn't even know, like, you know those kids that get them all the time and they just kind of know, like, they go into autopilot, like, this is how I handle my nosebleeds. I was not that kid. I was like, I don't know what to do when my nose is bleeding. And so I, like, sat there, like, trying to grab tissues for a little bit. And the woman next to me was just sleeping, which I'm kind of happy about because I would have felt bad for her. But also, like, no one around me was noticing this. And I feel like also seventh grade is kind of the age where you're, like, trying to learn how to, like, handle things on your own and be independent, and then also kind of an age where people kind of help you out and do some things for you still a little bit. And so I just had to, like, handle it myself. And so eventually I went to the bathroom and was trying to, like, rinse it and thought, like, maybe if I just rinse it all out, and it just kept bleeding. So I was like, okay, this is not working. So then I was going down the aisle of the plane, like, trying to find someone in my group to help me. And then that person grabbed a flight attendant. And then he grabbed, like, there was a nurse on the plane, and I guess the knowledge at the time was that you're supposed to lay as far back as possible with nosebleeds, which we now know is not the case at all.
Yeah.
And so they were debating, like, maybe we should have her lay down in the back of the plane. And I was just thinking, like, oh, no, they're going to make me lay down in the back of the plane. And then they said, oh, actually, we have a seat open in business class, so we'll put her there.
What?
Because the seats recline more. And so this is kind of like the fun ending of the story. I mean, the bummer is I had a nosebleed for over 4 hours on this plane ride.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was very uncomfortable. And then my clothes had blood on. Yeah, it was not fun. However, I got to sit in business class. And at that time, there were no screens on any of the seats in coach. However, business class got its own little pop-up screen, and then I got to watch movies.
Wow. All's well that ends well.
Yeah. Eventually the nosebleed stopped and I just got to hang out in business class for the rest of the plane ride. But I think that's maybe the most awkward I have felt while traveling.
Okay.
Ryan, did that buy you enough time?
Hopefully. I mean, I don't... Here's the thing. I try and avoid awkward situations. And then there are things that other people might title as awkward that I'm like, eh, it's just the way it is. And then so it doesn't register in my brain as awkward. So I've got like the two extremes. So whether this is like the most awkward, I don't know. But it was definitely an awkward moment. So I was on a flight home from Europe and I was by myself. And it was one of those big jets because it was probably Frankfurt to Seattle or some one of those long haul flights. And so it was like it must have been 3 seats on each side plus 4 seats across the middle. And I was in one of the seats in the middle, of course, because they're the cheaper seats. And I have relatively long legs. And the way that the seat the way that the seat supports, so the way the seats are attached to the floor of the cabin of the plane, there were only 2 actual supports Is this making any sense at all?
Yeah.
Are you tracking with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So that means that there were three zones underneath the seat in front of me, but there are four people across. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So there's nowhere to put your bag or your feet?
Well, there is, but the partitions that support the seats are not in line with where the different seats are.
That's a terrible choice.
Oh, trust me, I hate it with a vehement passion. And I learned that I hated it on this flight because for me, I was on, so again, four seats. I was the second seat in from the right-hand side. Okay, so I was one of the two middle seats, and there was one person to my right and then two people to my left. And the partition came, it was basically almost directly in front of my right leg was where the one partition was. And the other one was far off to the other side. And so the woman who was sitting next to me, of course, I didn't know. And I've got a backpack with me, and then I've got my long legs. And so I just say, oh, excuse me, the partition is, you know, is not really even. So is it okay if I just put my foot just right on the other side of this partition? Right? I'm trying to be, you know, friendly. And she's like, no, that's my space. And then I was on an 8-hour flight with her.
Oh, no.
So I'm like super worried about, like, I don't have enough space, but she is like not being flexible. And so I just have to stay here and be uncomfortable for 9 hours.
Oh, hours, and that's such a bummer because I feel like, I mean, there's just different thoughts on like, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And I'm much like you. I'm like, no, you communicate about it and you're polite and you're reasonable with people and then it works and they get it and we're all good and you've already gotten permission. But if it's a no and it's like, well, she didn't, like, it's no more her space than yours. You're on a plane. Then it's like wrong if you do it because she said no. And if you hadn't said anything, then like, hey, you could just put their foot there. And even if you're the jerk who puts the foot there, like, you didn't talk about it or whatever. Oh, gosh. Oh, no. So yeah, did you just like become a little ball on this flight? Oh, no.
Yikes.
Yeah, I was just, I had almost no like flexible leg room at all.
I can sense the claustrophobia. It just gives me claustrophobia thinking about that.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So that was definitely not a great experience. And so I have since started to document different planes when I go on them. And I'm not looking for much. I'm looking for where those partitions are and how the airline is actually built to see if I can have my own leg room that no one else is going to take from me or not.
And that would explain why it's a complicated answer when you are asked if you want the aisle or the window, or because it depends on the angle of the wall and all those
things.
And
the size of the plane and, all of those pieces, because I have run into those scenarios and it makes a difference for me.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. There you go. And then there's me with my short legs, and I've like never noticed those things in my life.
And be thankful.
Yeah, I mean, I am. So
tall people problems is a real thing.
Yep, it is for sure. Awesome. Well, we're going to go ahead and move to the last segment of our episode called Wish You Were Here. During this section, each of the three of us is going to share about a cool place that we've been on our travels. Think of it kind of like one of those old school postcards that has a snapshot of a really cool thing that says, Wish You Were Here. Cameron, what would you like to do for your wish you were here?
I think my wish you were here would be in Idaho. Because I have been, I don't want to say stuck because it doesn't sound very positive, but I've been enjoying a summer in Idaho instead of traveling. I've actually gotten to see a lot more of the state than I have ever before. So, and we've done a lot of hiking up to mountain lakes. And recently we went up to this one that was called Lake Stevens. And it was just this gorgeous blue mountain lake. No one else was really up there. And it was a super hot day. And so just got to jump in the water and just such a beautiful location. Exactly what you picture to be like a desktop background or like just the front of a postcard. So beautiful. So pristine.
Awesome. Lake Stevens, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. That sounds so fun.
Cheryl, what about you?
I would like to share about a thing I did on my honeymoon when I was in New Orleans. We went on the paddle wheeler Creole Queen. So it is a paddle wheel boat that goes on the river. So a river boat. And they offer different cruises. We went on the Creole Queen. That is a tongue twister. Creole Queen Jazz Cruise. And that is a nighttime cruise. And they have a jazz band there. And then they have, you can get a ticket with or without dinner. Of course, we got dinner. And they have a buffet of like, all of the local food that you need to try, always very fun for me because like you, Cameron, I want to try that local food, but you go somewhere like New Orleans and it's like, this is a long list of local food I need to try. Mm-hmm. And so it's really fun being able to try bites of a lot of things buffets, in one meal.
So good.
Yeah. And so, but it's so fun. It is so fun to see New Orleans on the river. I mean, like any city on a river, it's really fun to like get out on a boat and see it on a river. And at nighttime, it was gorgeous. And we were there in December at nighttime. Great temperature. and so, and it was it's a kind of a smallish boat. So it was like the dining room was not enormous and it was very chill there too. Like they didn't have much of like a program or anything, which was nice just to like hang out on a boat, listen to music, get a drink, have food. You could just go up on the deck whenever. But they offer some other cruises too. They have a historic cruise, which I think has like a narrator and they talk about the history of the place. They have a Christmas Eve cruise, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day brunch, 4th of July, all sorts of ones. It was great. I loved it. I think it was one of the highlights of our trip. So I would highly recommend it if you were in New Orleans.
Very cool. Food and jazz. What more can you want?
Yeah, exactly.
On a boat.
How about you, Ryan?
I'm actually going to do a food one.
So,
I know, Cheryl. I'm excited. So I'm going to talk about a restaurant that I'm probably going to mispronounce because I'm really good at mispronouncing things, but I'll do my best. I believe it's something like Agli Artisti, and it's in Venice. And we did a gondola ride, which is very touristy, but also very fun. And one of our gondola driver people actually recommended the restaurant. And so we're like, okay, we'll try. And we went in and I think we just had two choices when we were there, maybe because we were a group, but it was basically like traditional just spaghetti, or I don't remember what the other one was. And I just got spaghetti with, you know, like a marinara meat sauce. And it was phenomenal. It was so good. Probably the best spaghetti I've ever had. And it was just this small, tiny little restaurant. And if you've been to Venice before, you know, it's super easy to get lost in Venice. The streets go every which way. And, you know, you can go down this little street and all of a sudden there's a bunch of things and go to another street and then you're in a totally different place. So it's just a really, really cool little Italian restaurant in Venice. And I would totally recommend it if you're ever there.
Awesome. Well, Cameron, thank you so much for being on our podcast. We loved having you.
It was so fun. Thanks for having me.
Yay! Do you have anything that you want to plug?
I would definitely plug YWAM and the stuff that they're doing in Papua New Guinea. Just looking up the website, they have so many pictures. And if anyone was even remotely interested in healthcare or interested in, they take boat mechanics. And even if you just want to work in the kitchen and sail around Papua New Guinea, definitely consider volunteering. They do really cool work. Just kind of you don't really get that experience anywhere else. So
absolutely. We would love it if you all would follow us on social media. We are at TimWeePodcast. That's TMWY for Take Me With You podcast. And hopefully Cameron will share some of those amazing pictures that she talked about. And then we can post those up on our social media accounts so you guys can all see them. We are on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
You can also email us at timwepodcast@gmail.com. Send us suggestions of guests that we should have on, topics we should cover, and tell us your most awkward travel story.
Absolutely. And we'd love to actually hear your most awkward travel story from you. And so you could even call us and leave us a voicemail with your awkward travel story at 406-763-8699. Or if it's easier to remember, 406-POD-TIMWE. Please remember to go and rate and review our podcast to tell other people what you think about it. Subscribe to make sure you don't miss a new episode, and share about this episode on social media so other people can learn about Papua New Guinea.
As always, thank you to Beth Reed Miller for the awesome artwork. You can check out more of Beth's artwork at Beth Is Something. And thank you to Erica Corbin for the use of her song Round the Globe. You can listen to Erica's music wherever music is sold or streamed.
Cameron, it was great hearing your experiences. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing them with us today.
You're welcome.
Yay!
That's all we got this week. So until next time, remember to take me with you.
Take me with you!
Can we get a sailboat chasing down the sunset as we float round and round the globe? Salty air and balmy nights, guided only by the lights above.